If it's a work in progress, I'm thinking that I need the rest. That's Holly Humberstone. I'm Blake Murphy. This is Jays Talk Plus. Almost at the rest part of the season. The Toronto Blue Jays have 6 games left to go. Very much looked like a work in progress over the weekend. They get swept by the Tampa Bay Rays in a series of one-run games, 1-0, 3-2, 4-3. If you are someone who, at this point in the year, has been bringing up the Tankathon standings instead of the Major League Baseball standings, well, that was probably a good weekend for you. The Jays jockeyed back into a tie for the 5th worst record. The best they can hope to do at this point is the 5th worst record, which would give them a 7.5% shot at that number one pick. Of course, this is baseball, so cool. Get to know that guy's name and then see you in 5 or 6 years. But still, we had some fun with Arjun Namala this year. I'm sure we'll have some fun with Treya Savage next year. Yeah, it'd be cool to have a top pick, but certainly not what we were supposed to be talking about here on September 23rd. There are fun wildcard races all around baseball. We'll talk about those throughout the show today. We'll talk some Minnesota Twins. They have collapsed and fallen out of a playoff spot. The Tigers have pulled into a tie with Kansas City for those final two spots. Seattle's still on the periphery of that as well, although they've got Houston today. Houston tried to lock up the division. And over on the NL side, it's wide open as well. Arizona and the Mets in those two spots. Atlanta 2 games back, but Atlanta and the Mets head-to-head Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday this week. So a lot to happen. It's a fun, fun week. The Jays will close out their season with 3 at home against the Red Sox. Starting tonight down at Rogers Center, Chris Bassitt against Tanner Houck. They will have Thursday off, and they'll finish out the season against the Marlins Friday to Sunday. We are going to finish up Jays Talk Plus tomorrow. There will be shows in this spot Wednesday to Friday, but I'm out after tomorrow. If I survive Monday Night Football and the tailgate with Jack Armstrong tonight, we'll see how that goes. Jags at Bills later tonight. Today for the show, though, we'll talk to Davey Andrews a little later about the collapse of that Twins team. Set you up for the Red Sox series. Right now, we're joined in studio by Arden Zwelling of Sportsnet, of At the Letters. How you doing, man?
Good, man. You're going tonight?
I am. I am right from here, hopping on a train. My brother is coming from Cambridge, so I will train to Hamilton. He has to drive through Hamilton to get Cambridge to Buffalo anyway. He'll pick me up at the train station. We'll go. Going to meet up with Jack Armstrong before the game. I am a Jaguars fan. My brother is a big Jaguars fan. So, yeah, it should be fun, even though the Jaguars are not off to a very good start.
Jack going to be jumping off some school buses, or what are we doing?
We'll see. I believe me as the invading Jaguars fan, I'm probably the likeliest to be put through a table. That's that's how I understand it.
You got the wrestling experience, man. You'd know how to take that, right?
Yes, I have the, whether we go amateur wrestling, obviously pro wrestling, I'll commentate my own getting put through a table.
That'd I guarantee great. You'd sell it. You'd put it over 100%.
Yes, look at you with the insider terms. Put it over.
Hey,
good stuff.
We're going to work ourselves into a shoot.
There you go. Okay.
It's Jays, as far as I can go.
Yeah, no, it's a good one, brother. Okay. The Jays got swept at Tampa. We can get into some of the game stuff. It was a weekend of games. There's useful information in there. Ladd's only 7 points back of Bobby Witt Jr. for the batting title. That's probably the most relevant thing. The other relevant thing, we saw Jonathan Clase debut for the Blue Jays. He had a stolen base that was not a stolen base on Friday. Kind of went a little too far, got tagged out. Had 2 hits yesterday, including a double. What did you see from Clase in his debut? What is the team looking for here this final week from him? As far as, hey, what's your readiness for 2025?
Yeah, not the first time he's done that at second base. Like, he's done that a handful of times at AAA as well. Like, 100% something the Blue Jays are going to need to address with him for some reason. He is so fast that he just overslides the base with regularity. So there is an adjustment to be made there. But, yeah, I mean, you saw the speed. You saw the power, like a couple really well-struck balls. And I think just you saw the tools that the Blue Jays are excited in, but you also saw the rawness too, right? And a little bit of the development that is still to come with them. I think there's still a lot of finishing school for him to be done at the upper levels of the minors. Remember, the Mariners really rushed him up this year because of injuries, and he's still just 22. Like, he was the youngest player in the PCL this year, which means he's now one of the youngest players in the majors, the youngest player on the Blue Jays roster. So it's understandable that there's still some rough edges to be smoothed out here.
Yeah, it's a little like, you know, the big call-ups this year have been like, okay, well, Ernie Clement's around. Well, he's almost 29. Spencer Horwitz gets called up. He's almost 27. Will Wagner comes over on his 26th birthday. And I know that, like, prospects are prospects, and, you know, 22, 23 is not that different from 26 in, like, real life terms, but that's a ton of baseball years. That's from you are barely on the major league radar to, if you're 26, 27, those are supposed to be the beginning of your peak years as a position player. It's a huge gap developmentally.
Yeah, it's funny to think of it like when you talked, you mentioned Arjun Namala, right? I mean, is he 19 yet?
I don't think he's turned 19. I think he's still, he finished the season at 18.
Right. So he should be like getting ready for prom or something, you know what I mean? Like, or getting ready for his freshman year of college or something. Like, just think about where you were at that age. And these guys are trying to be professionals and, you know, at the highest level of baseball, right? So you got to give a little bit of grace at times. Like, you saw that with Namala this year, right? Mm-hmm. Like, the Blue Jays challenged him this year when they sent, like, he should have started at the Complex League.
Oh, yeah.
And he went to Dunedin, which is going to be a big challenge. And you saw it in the results early on. And the understanding with him was, like, they were straight up, hey, this is a challenge. If it doesn't go well, we're liable to pull you back, work on some things, and send you back out. What happened? Namala got exposed. They pulled him back, worked on some, you know, just some postural things at the plate and some reasons why he was getting beat. Worked on that at the Complex. He goes back out to Dunedin and hits like 14 bombs in however many games.
Finished the season with the second best OPS of anyone in that league. Not just any 18-year-old, of anyone in that league. He only, I've used this stat before, so apologies to regular listeners. He had one plate appearance all season against a pitcher who was younger than him.
Wild. Isn't that crazy? So, and this is a guy who we're seeing like 110 exit velos from, like you said, not even yet 19, which is wild. I mean, this is why the Blue Jays are so high on him, and there's real belief he can stick at shortstop as well. Like, he still has so much room to fill out and add strength and get better. So, like, I think it's, you know, it's obviously you see a lot of position players coming out of the Blue Jays system, and it seems like they're kind of rolling the dice and coming up with a lot of like one win, two win players.
High floor, low ceiling types.
Namal is the guy, you roll the dice, you might come up with a six if things go well.
Yeah, so, or the dice rolls off the table and you're asked to leave the casino. Yeah, there's a lot of different possibilities for him. But this is, yeah, on the position player side especially, this is what the organization has lacked a little bit, that high upside guy who, yeah, I mean, look, it's great the Jays have all these guys who could, who figure in to be high-end bench pieces or, you know, part-time slash platoon guys. Those are great. It's a core part of being a good team is not having bad players.
Dudes, right? Produce dudes.
Yes.
You need dudes, but you also need the upside, right?
Exactly.
So you need to be building around like a Vlad and a Bo and a Springer and a Kirk who are all giving you like 4, 5, 6 win seasons. Like, that's why this Blue Jays season went the way it did, because Springer and Bo obviously gave you the seasons that they did. Kirk's been great lately, but the first half of the year wasn't quite as productive. Mm-hmm. So you need to fill in around your high upside players with dudes, like above replacement level dudes. And if you were producing those regularly, then that's good. You just need to find the upside somewhere. The Blue Jays haven't had it internally, so I think this offseason they probably have to go get it externally and add somebody who offensively, when you put your head on the pillow at night, you're like, this guy's going to hit. I have no worries about him.
Yeah, and whether that's a table setter for Vlad so that RBI number is higher than 100 in the season he's had, or it's someone behind him and, you know, hey, his on-base value takes an even greater value because he's setting the table for someone who's not a rotating cast of cleanup hitters who have combined for like 2 homers from the cleanup spot all season or whatever that stat is. Okay, on the, I do want to talk some like big picture 2025 stuff, but to close out kind of what this weekend was, they used a bullpen day yesterday. Ryan Yarbrough take on a big chunk of that. It kind of seems like they might use one more of those this weekend. I know like they could just start everyone and like, well, there's 6 games left. So you could keep everyone on turn and Bassett gets game 162, but it seems likely to me that like one of those Miami games is a bullpen day or an Easton Lucas slash Jake Bloss type. What is your read on that?
I think that in terms of likelihood, I would go first bullpen day, second Bassett, third reward for somebody from the minors, right? So like you said, yeah, Easton Lucas. Andrew Bash, right? If it's, hey, Buffalo's pitcher
Bash
of the year.
Not on the 40-man, though.
I know, but I mean, he's 28, and you signed him out of Indie Ball 2 years ago.
You did it for Wes Parsons last year.
Missoula. I mean, yeah. There's a lot of pieces on this 40-man who are perhaps expendable. So if you had to...
You mean the 7 relievers they have at AAA on the 40-man?
I was like, how can I put this delicately? So if you had to open up a spot for an Andrew Bash, why not? So I like that idea as a sentimentalist a little bit, as a guy who's a fan of development, a fan of stories. Yeah. Like, if you can reward an Andrew Bash with an MLB debut in game 162, great. I don't think it's going to happen. I think it's likely going to be Burr Yarbrough. And hey, man, in 2025, I think you could see Burr Yarbrough again. Like, Ryan Burr has showed the Blue Jays something. The slider's legit.
Yeah.
I would be surprised if he wasn't in the bullpen next year. The Blue Jays have interest in bringing back Ryan Yarbrough. And, like, the advantage they have right now is they have exclusive negotiating time with him before he hits free agency and could go talk to 29 other teams. So they can sell him right now. Like, he obviously knows the pitching group really well, and he kind of knows the environment and what the Blue Jays do for families. Blue Jays spring training right around the corner from where Ryan Yarbrough lives, from where he grew up, from where his wife grew up. I mean, that's a big advantage when you're selling a guy on, hey, you want to spend spring training living at home with your family, your young yeah. family and your kids. That's a selling point. So look, if, like, let's say November 5th, the Blue Jays sign Ryan Yarbrough for like 2 years, $9 million. Wouldn't be a shock. I think they like him, and I think they'd love to bring him back.
Yeah, that's interesting to hear. I had planned to ask you about that because he's such a fascinating guy with, yesterday aside, generally low strikeout rates. And, you know, you wonder how does the team project that forward, but the ability to soak up bulk innings in multiple roles, even, I mean, heck, stretch him out for spring training just to see, right? Just to, I mean, you're probably, if he's starting games as a full-time starter, things have probably gone poorly, but you're going to need a long man in the bullpen. You're going to need someone who can do a day like that sometimes. And yeah, Ryan Burr is going to be a minimum contract again next year. Like, doesn't seem like he's at risk to be one of the 40-man churns like the Yerry Rodriguez and Luis Frias types who, nice to get to know you probably with some of those guys, but
yeah, I think Burr, Nance, Little are kind of like the upper tier yeah. of that crew. Dylan Tate could move up there. The velo is a little suspect still, but
he's still like not far removed from the injury.
Yeah.
I mean, he's just one that like at the time of acquisition is the one I was most interested in just because the track record was pretty strong and not that far ago. And you understand why it stopped working. It was like, oh, yeah, right. You were hurt.
Yeah.
And then you had to undergo. And I guess you can decide that, what, in November, mid-November is when you'll have to kind of decide on that with, like, arb process and stuff.
Yeah, I don't know exactly when the tender deadline is. But.
And then the names you didn't mention there. So Little Nance and Burr probably sticking on the roster as minimum guys.
I think so.
Potentially Tate in there. Maybe you re-sign Yarbrough, and then Cabrera is easily safe. Like I looked at his second half numbers today. He's been unbelievable.
Yeah.
What do you make of the Eric Swanson side of it, where he's probably like a 3.5 mil in ARB guy? Obviously, you can work something different out with him. ERA of like 3 in the second half, but a bad one yesterday as well. What do you make of that part of how they handle the bullpen?
His command's been a lot better over the second half, which is encouraging. And the stuff has never fluctuated at any point. Like, the stuff's always been the stuff. Like, metrically, you look at models, you look at shapes, you look at everything that we have to evaluate this stuff. It's just been the same. Velo, movement, action. So it's really been command for him. So he's shown you that over the back half. It depends. Do you think you can use those $3 million better? Maybe you think you can, right? Like, maybe you think you can, like, you think about that wave of Gio Urshelas and Ahmed Rosarios who signed for like 1.5 towards the end of last offseason. Well, yeah, you could go out and get two of those guys for $3 million. Maybe that's a better deployment mm-hmm. of the resource. Maybe there's more value there. It'll really depend on just where the Blue Jays project Swanson versus what he's liable to make in arbitration and just where they're at from a kind of the budgetary payroll standpoint and what they think the best use of those $3 million is. So to me, I'm kind of in the middle. I could, if they non-tender him, I would understand it. If they bring him back, I would understand it.
Yeah, it's hard because like we've lived the day-to-day of his season and it seems on the surface to be like, yeah, if it's $3.5 million, that's like he hasn't earned that. That's probably not worth it. And then you ask me, how would you address the bullpen this offseason, and I would start looking at guys who were really good before and had a bad year, and the price point has probably gone down. Like, I'll bring up David Bednar's name a million times because, like, he's got an ERA, like, up around 6 with the Pirates, and he's going to get, like, probably 5.5, 6.5 million in arbitration, and the Pirates aren't going to want to pay that if they don't believe he's going to bounce back. It's like, you would be looking for the Swanson types.
Yep.
if you were going to try to affordably rebuild the bullpen. So I go back and forth on it as well.
Yeah, and they have no question about like the character or how sure. he fits in with the, you know, the clubhouse. He's loved in there.
Obviously,
like
a lot of context to how his season started and the delayed the, through spring training and the late start and things like that.
So that would all be working his advantage, as you said. It's a good point. Like if you're going out and looking for the undervalued arms, like Eric Swanson's going to be at the top of that list just based off of how this year went. We like know how volatile performance can be for relievers. I don't think anybody should be surprised if Eric Swanson's really good in a leverage role next year.
Yeah, it's
for someone.
Yeah, and then someone else will be really good, and someone who was good will be really bad. Good luck with relievers. Okay, want to take it down onto the farm a little bit because this is the time of year we will very likely find out. I've already said them on air, but it'll probably be confirmed by the team or by you guys. The Arizona Fall League list will come out. The Jays will send 8 guys. I mentioned them on the show the other day. We can go into some of them. But bigger picture, how do the Jays, in your understanding, go about making these decisions? The easiest one is, we like this pitcher. He didn't get enough innings this year. We need to keep building him out. Kendry Rojas, bam. TJ Brock, bam. There you go. Those ones I understand. When it comes to a pitcher or a hitter or a fringier pitcher, what are they looking for when they make those decisions on who's getting assigned?
A lot of it is like, this guy just needs more volume and this guy just needs some more exposure. It's a really good league, so it can be a good opportunity to, if you've got somebody who you think is kind of ready for an additional challenge, but they just, the promotion didn't work out that year for whatever reason, you can send them there and challenge them with a higher caliber of competition. And it's kind of like a, you know, it's a free look.
So that would be like a Peyton Williams. It raked at high A most of the year, didn't make sense timing wise to get him to double A.
For
so
a guy,
let's send him to AFL.
Yes, and a guy like him, he would also fit into the category of somebody who's working on his defense, right?
Yeah.
Because, I mean, you don't want him to be just like Adam Dunn. Like, you want him to be somebody who can play first base.
Right.
So that's been a real big focus for him this year, and like I think the Jays are encouraged by the strides he's made, but they want him to continue that work at first base. So that's another part of it, is either if you have somebody who you want working more on their defense or somebody who you want to expose to a different defensive position. Like that was kind of Palmigiani last year, right? Where
who was Zach Britton, the catcher turned outfielder a couple years ago? Yeah, really?
Yeah, since retired. Man. Zach Britton. The 2020.
If you have the name Zach Britton, you are just sitting. You will not be used in a game in a big game in Toronto if your name is Zach Britton.
No, yeah, he's probably still in real estate or something. Unfortunately, because he was really promising and had positional versatility and worked a really good plate appearance, but ultimately chose to walk away. That 2020 draft, the only guy remaining, CJ Van Eyck.
Really?
Everyone else,
the only one. Eh?
So Trent Palmer got released this year. Austin Martin traded. Zach Britton retired. I'm forgetting one, and then CJ Van Eyck, the last guy remaining. So
what a weird draft. For a million reasons. Yeah. Yeah.
For everyone.
Okay.
Anyway, those are kind of the reasons, like defensive versatility, exposure, see him against a higher level of competition. It can be a bit of reward sometimes, but I think usually you want to use it a bit more opportunistically.
And then there are, Edinson Paulinho, they pick up in a trade. He only got into 10 games since the trade due to injury. Let's get a longer look at him. Adrian Pinto fits into that as well. And he also nudges up against the other category of guy I think of, which is, this guy needs Rule 5 protection. Is it worth protecting? Now, he only got as high as high A this year. I don't know that any team would be like, yeah, give me that 22-year-old who's never played above high A and we're going to keep him on the major league roster all year. But, I mean, we saw that a little bit, I think, with Palmigiani and Robertson last year when they went. I think part of that was like, yeah, let's get more sample before we have to make a 40-man decision. Is that a component as well?
You see that. You also see that late in seasons when guys take on new roles. Like I just mentioned Van Eyck, like he kind of morphed into reliever towards the end of the year when he's been a starter his whole way up. And part of that is he's Rule 5 eligible. And the Blue Jays are like, let's see what this looks like. Because maybe this is somebody who we need to think about adding, right? Like, let's just get a look at it. A lot of it was workload as well. Like his stuff kind of trended down. But, I think the teams take a chance late in seasons to see some of their minor leaguers who are Rule 5 eligible just in different positions against different levels of competition in different roles, just to kind of check all the boxes and make sure that you're not like leaving a Jordan Romano exposed.
Oops.
Who you've been developing as a starter, and then all of a sudden somebody picks him up and tries him as a reliever and makes the mistake of letting you take him back. You know, you don't want to make, that's the type of stuff that'll keep you up at night as a developmental guy. So you want to make sure you're trying everybody and making sure if you're going to leave somebody exposed.
Nick Frassel, the other name.
That was the other one. Traded to the Dodgers.
Yes.
Hurt again, I want to say.
Yeah, he missed all of this year, I think. I don't think he got, maybe he got back at the tail end here, but he got hurt late last year and missed the whole season.
He'll show up in the majors at 31 and have like an amazing season out of somebody's bullpen.
Yeah, he'll Jeff Hoffman it.
Yeah.
Nate Pearson's doing it with the Cubs right now since 100%. Getting traded. Yeah.
He's in leverage. He isn't walking anybody. He's striking guys out.
Yeah. Okay. So I mentioned Adrian Pinto, Peyton Williams, Edinson Paulinho. Those are on the hitter side. TJ Brock, Kendry Rojas, Laz Estrada, Jonathan Lavallee, and Ryan Jennings on the pitcher side. Just quickly, which of those names is the most of interest to you? Who are you like curious about getting a look there?
Peyton Williams is obviously the guy that you love to watch because he's like 6'6", 260 conservatively.
He's listed at 255. And yeah, when I see those, I had Brent Lavallee, the manager of the Vancouver Canadiens on last week. And I did want to ask him, like, how huge is this dude actually? Oh.
He's an offensive lineman. Yeah. Like, it's unbelievable. But the thing is, it's not just power. Like, you'd think that he was, like I said, Adam Dunn, just trying to yank everything. But people who saw him down the stretch in Vancouver said he was, like, one of the most feared guys in that league for, like, 6 weeks, not only because of the power, but also because he just started taking what he was given, right? So I think that when Vancouver was in the playoffs, like, he had a bunch of hits. And none of it was like bombs. A lot of it was just going the other way because that's what he was getting. And he was like, okay, I'm going to do what's best for my team here. So there's a hit tool there as well. This isn't a guy who's just trying to like tap into what are like the biggest exit velos in the organization this side of Vladimir Guerrero Jr. It's like Peyton Williams and Rainer Nunez are the two guys who
knew Rainer was going to come up.
Yeah, the two guys who hit it the hardest in the minors. But yeah, apparently there's a hit tool there as well, which is exciting if he can continue to develop on that.
Yeah, he finished hitting .289 this year. He had 31 extra base hits in 77 games. So, you know, we're not talking when you hear, 11 home runs and 20 doubles. You got to, he only played 77 games. That's a big factor. And 133 weighted runs created plus, so adjusting for league and park factors and things like that. Aurelvis Martinez is not going to Arizona Fall League. That was a question a couple weeks ago when he first came back from his suspension. Over 11 games to close the AAA season, he had .304 with an .882 OPS, 11 strikeouts to 3 walks, 7 extra base hits in there. What is the plan for Aurelvis Martinez from here?
So I believe he's contracted to a Dominican Winter League team. So basically, like, they would have the option of bringing him in or not. And I would imagine that they will because he's very, very good. I know what everyone is thinking with Aurelvis Martinez, right? Like, is the power for real? Because he obviously popped for a performance-enhancing drug. I have asked that question directly to people who matter, and they've said, don't worry about that. Like, when this guy was 17, 18, 19, he had mammoth power. So nobody with the Blue Jays believes that it was a result of, whatever he was or was not taking for whatever reason he was or was not taking it. I think that he probably goes and plays Winter League. He's been at the complex for the last, basically since he was suspended, working on the body, working on defense. Apparently physically he looks really good, is what I've heard. I haven't seen him up close, but apparently like he made some physical strides, and I mean, they really hammered him on the defense while he was at the complex because it was like, all right, let's make use of this time out of competition. Obviously, you're still going to take BP and you're still going to face live pitching, but like the biggest weakness for him when he showed up the big league level was clearly the defense.
Yeah.
And the Blue Jays don't really need another designated hitter on their roster at this time. So they need to find a place for him to live on the infield, preferably. So that's been a real big focus for him. I'm told he's taken strides, and I expect he'll continue to try to take some of those strides this winter in the Dominican.
So he is, his rights are held by the Licey Tigers. They have not updated their roster on their website since 2021.
Okay.
So I don't know if he's on the current iteration of that team, but he played for them. I think he got like 10 games up with them last year. So last one on the kind of organizational developmental stuff. You tweeted about this the other day that, first of all, you tweeted a couple weeks ago that Corey Popham, the team's pitching coordinator, had been let go. He's moving on. There have been a rash of injuries on the pitching side. You tweeted out a couple other names that included Chad Dallas, who was potentially 2025 relevant this year, but something like 11 or 12 from Alek Manoah on down, UCL injuries in the organization. Now, they'd had stronger numbers than average the 2 years before. So if we look at a larger sample, you know, it's probably just year-to-year randomness why this one's so high and those ones were so low. But with this being such a huge thing around baseball generally, and this year being such an outlier bad year for the Blue Jays on the pitching health and pitching development side, what is the team looking at right now? Like, are we headed for changes here? Are they re-examining the kind of load-building approach that they're doing here? What's the status there?
Yes, they are. I think that's important context, right? Because, like, this problem isn't just a Blue Jays problem.
Right.
It's 30 teams' problem. It's the industry's problem. So it's not just a Blue Jays thing, but they have had a substantial number of elbow injuries this year after the last couple of years being kind of on the fortunate side of that. But that doesn't mean that you just kind of say, oh, it's just randomness and it's just variance and bad luck. Like, the Blue Jays are looking into this, and they are going to make some adjustments in how they build pitchers up in the spring and just how early they have certain guys throwing, how intensely they have certain guys throwing. One thing they did last year was they shifted their instructional camp up to like right before spring training, which is then in anticipation of this year when, under that minor league agreement for the union with the players, there's like a dead zone period.
Yeah.
Thanksgiving to, I mean, pretty close to Christmas, essentially, right? American Thanksgiving. There's like 6 weeks where you can't talk to guys, can't have them in for camps. Like, the Jays complex right now is just like buzzing because they're trying to run all these camps right now.
165, and that's just domestic minor league contracts. And then you've got, obviously, to the Dominican, I think you're allowed to bring those guys over to check in on them and things like that. Guys might be ready for the bump.
So they're having all kinds of camps right now, and they had shifted their instructional league to kind of right before spring training last year. So that meant they had a lot of guys throwing at very high intensity in like mid-January, in late January. And some guys can handle that, right? But some guys, maybe that's not the best idea. So I think that the Blue Jays are going to be evaluating that and maybe running that instructional league build up a little bit differently. Like I said, some guys might still benefit from throwing at really high intensities in mid to late January. Some guys, based on your monitoring data from the year prior, based on the intake assessments when they show up, maybe they don't do that. And maybe there's a little bit of a developmental sacrifice there, but if that means somebody holds up for the 6 months of the season and doesn't blow out an elbow, that's a worthwhile trade-off.
Yeah, it's a whole extra year of development at, say, 80% versus a lost year at 0%, and then 100% on either side of it, right?
Yeah. So that's one side, is the build-ups heading into spring training. And then another side, it's more philosophical, and it's less of just like the Blue Jays want to have less of a pure pursuit of just the nastiest stuff metrically.
Okay.
And they want to layer in a bit more of the pitchability and a bit more development focused on how do you set hitters up? How do you read their swings? How do you work backwards to them?
Like, and we heard that about a couple of the different pitchers that they'd picked in the draft this year. Like, that, if there was a common thread in the pitchers they draft, it was, okay, they throw multiple pitches. They throw multiple pitches for strikes. There's like a pitchability there, for lack of a better term.
Yeah, and I think that, like a lot of organizations, the Blue Jays probably got a little too far towards the, like, who has the nastiest metrics, right? Like, how much velo can we help this guy add? How much spin can we help him add? Like, look, stuff still matters,
of
right?
Course.
Watch the playoff bullpens, right? Like, everybody's got absolute beasts coming out of there when it comes to velocity, action, movement, just unhittable stuff. That matters, but pitchability matters in terms of longevity, and ultimately you want longevity because if a player isn't available to pitch, it doesn't matter how nasty his pitches are. This is stuff that Chris Bassitt has been like screaming from the rooftops about all year, and I think it's, you'll see a little bit of a shift going forward. As you mentioned, the Blue Jays replaced their pitching coordinator. Corey Popham will not be coming back, and they're going to be looking for somebody to come in who I think can strike a bit better of a balance organizationally between the stuff, the nastiness, the velo, which is very important, but also some of the Bassitt stuff and the Barrio stuff, where it's, how do I set you up? What's my pitchability like? How do I get through 180, 190 innings in a season?
Yeah, how do I get through a lineup the third time?
Yeah.
So we're not Ryan Burr, Ryan Yarboring it once every time through the order. We're only doing it when we've got 17 in 17 days or something like that. And I mean, in terms of the metrically, like, Bowden, to use Stuff Plus, which is Eno Saris's, that's up on Fangraphs. Bowden Francis for the year comes in at 97. Kevin Gausman at 94. Jose Barrios at 92. And Yariel Rodriguez at 97. And all four of those guys have a second half ERA of 4 or below.
Right.
Now, Chris Bassitt has had a rough second half, but Chris Bassitt has a really long track record of, without elite stuff, outperforming his peripherals and things like that. Like, yeah, the Jays, I mean, it's funny. Like, I get why everyone chases the big metrics and stuff like that. And obviously for bullpen, like I think for bullpen guys, it really, really matters.
Yes.
Like you, like that's why they hunt Ryan Burr and his slider, Tommy Nance's curveball and stuff. As a reliever, you got to have at least one nasty pitch and preferably two. But the Jays have had multiple years of evidence at the major league level that starting pitchers, like it's, you got to have good pitches, but like how you feel your way through 180 innings is like a really important skill. And with those guys, how you keep yourself healthy too.
And you don't want to have to keep going outside the organization to find those guys, right? Because you see it in the starting pitchers at the Blue Jays target, all the guys you mentioned, they've loved Kyle Gibson forever. Why do you think that is?
Right? I wonder.
And you see it as well in like a Trey Savage who like the stuff is good, like it's big league stuff, but it's not going to be like, I don't know, like Blake Snell or something. Like it's not going to be insane stuff, right? So you need to eventually start developing some pitchers who are capable of going 160, 170, 180 innings. Like that was part of the Chad Dallas thing was like stuff isn't crazy, but he could be like a number four, number five for you
to close out back on Andrew Bash. Right. Like, I mean, he's maybe not a long-term guy, but a sub three ERA in a hitter friendly environment at AAA with like, I don't know, a 21% strikeout rate.
Jake Bloss, a guy as well, who's like the stuff isn't insane, but he's shown like some durability and he's shown an ability to get deep into games and he's got a good innings base. Same thing with your Savage. He's coming off of like 93 innings at college. So it's not unreasonable for him to get up.
Part of the draw
to, like,
with Bowden too, right? Yeah. Like I know they DFA'd him and like they kind of, you made the Romano comment or like they got away with one with Bowden and like he was available for everyone and they got another chance. But yeah, a guy who would pitch 133 innings in the minors before or whatever and like obviously has the frame to you know sustain as a starter. Arden.
Yep.
Thanks so much for taking the time out, man. Have a terrific last series down at the ballpark, and then looking forward to you on the American League side of our playoff broadcast.
Appreciate that, man. Thank you.
Arden Zwelling of Sportsnet, of At the Letters, on the broadcast tonight. I'll be on Blue Jay Central tomorrow. Yeah, I got to figure out what day of the week it is. It was a weekend, man. Okay, we'll take a break. When we come back on the other side, the Twins have collapsed and the Blue Jays have the Red Sox for this series. We'll talk about all that with Davey Andrews of Fangraphs. That's next as Jays Talk Plus continues on the Sportsnet Radio Network and Sportsnet 360.
Everything you need to know about the Blue Jays. Blair and Barker. Be sure to subscribe and download the show on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back to Jays Talk Plus. I'm Blake Murphy, bringing the energy way down with that song playing us back in. It's the energy that would match the Minnesota Twins right now. The Jays are playing the Red Sox this series. We will talk about that as well and set you up for that. It's a Chris Bassitt against Tanner Houck game tonight. But the most interesting story over the last week or maybe 2 weeks in baseball, there's the Mets. We talked about the Mets and how fun they are. They're a whole two games up on the break. That's old news. The Tigers have caught up with the Minnesota Twins and pass them. What the heck, Minnesota Twins? They've dropped 22 of their last 33, including four of their last five. They are now a game back of the Tigers and Royals for those final two wild card spots. Let's talk to Davey Andrews of Fangraphs and Twins Daily, and now Talk Sox too. He's all over the place. Davey, what's up, man? How are you?
I'm good. I'm just going to dispose of my Mets notes real quick here.
Yeah, no need. We're going to focus on it's more in the spirit of this year's Blue Jays season and this year's Blue Jays show to talk about a team that is blowing it rather than a team that's done. So this is a Twins conversation, not a Tigers conversation.
New notes.
I mentioned it. They've dropped four or five and 22 of 33 going back like 5-6 weeks here. What has happened with the Minnesota Twins? I know they're not out, but the Tigers playoff odds are now up to like 70% on Fangraphs. Yeah. This felt like a certainty like 3 weeks ago that the Twins were in.
You know, maybe it's just that I've inherited some of the Twins fandom over the last several months, but it didn't feel like a certainty to me. there is a lot to believe in this team, and I still think that they could be dangerous if they get in the playoffs. But man, it's just things aren't going right. I mean, the biggest thing is the pitching has been rough. They're thin in the bullpen. And even when they were performing okay earlier in the season, you know, like people who knew and I'd heard from people with the team that they were aware that they just didn't have the bullpen depth. And so it's a rough time, and then that's been exposed lately. You know, like they picked up Cole Irvin from the Orioles on waivers just because he wasn't pitching that well in Baltimore. His ERA is over five. But with the Twins, all of a sudden, that's good enough for a high leverage role. They kind of threw him right in the deep end, and the last time out, it didn't work so hot. But it's that's where they are. That a cast off from a good team is all of a sudden an arm that they really need to depend on.
Yeah, and like Louis Varland has been allowed to throw 45 innings with an ERA of almost eight. Like it's not
right.
I mean, that can happen. Like sometimes a guy's availability and just eat some innings is there, and maybe you don't want to risk a guy on the DFA. Getting claimed or something like that, and he becomes someone else's Cole Irvin. But man, when you have to use a guy like that much when he's pitching that poorly, it's tough. And then, of course, Pablo Lopez has a bad outing yesterday. He's been excellent, otherwise over, I think, his seven starts before that. He'd been really good. But this isn't a team that really has the, rotation. It's not quite the rotation they had last year where obviously they were able to bounce a certain team in two games in the playoffs. it is like Zebby Matthews is interesting long term. He's not been good yet.
Yes.
Bailey Ober, Simeon Woods, Richardson, David Festa have all had, worse 5-6 week stretches here than the rest of the season. And then on the hitter side, man, the guy I wanted to ask you about most is Royce Lewis, because that's a guy who, man, the book on him for so long was anytime if he could stay healthy, there's superstar status there. He's had a really rough go here. What's gone into that for Royce Lewis?
Well, I mean, honestly, I don't think people are 100% certain. Around, Twins fans are noticing that his feet don't look settled in the box. He earlier this year, he'd kind of picked up a thing with his leg kick where he was doing sort of a modified toe tap, and it was a little different. And lately, if you watch him at the plate, he doesn't look settled. His feet are moving. He just doesn't look comfortable. I'm not sure what is going on. I've been delaying looking into it because I figured the second that I started looking into it, in between research and writing and editing, he would hit five home runs. But it's a time I'm going to have to kind of dive into it because it's rough. And, like you said, he's kind of never done anything but succeed, especially at the big league level. So it's one of those things where they were missing Buxton for a couple months. They're missing Correa, and now they're back and Buxton looks healthy. Correa doesn't seem to have the power, but he is finding a way to get on base. But so that's there's a lot to worry about at the moment.
There is. And yeah, usually, if the Twins are bad, I'm like, okay, well, Buxton and Correa must be, and Royce Lewis, like some combination of them are hurt. And I know that like Alex Kirilloff and Max Kepler are hurt. And I think, Matt Wallner being unbelievably good has helped make up for some of that. But if Buxton and Correa and Lewis aren't going to hit like stars when they're healthy, that's a tough way to live. And they've been the number 23 offense over the last 6 weeks or so during this 11-22 stretch. So they now they close out with six at home and they have the tiebreaker. So those are positives. They play Miami, which is not a very good baseball team. And then a Baltimore team that A, hasn't played super well lately, and B, might have nothing to play for in that series. The Yankees are either a Yankees win or Baltimore loss from clinching the division. Baltimore should be safe in the wild card one spot. Fangraphs right now has the Minnesota Twins at 53.8% to make the playoffs. How do you feel about that?
First of all, my screen has 53.9, just so we're on the same page. That's where I am.
A decimal point higher. Got it. Okay.
Oh, I just meant emotionally.
Yes.
That I need to keeping track of those tenths of percentiles. I mean, it's hard to say. So that you just described who they're playing, but the other three teams with a chance all have, you could argue, easier schedules. The Tigers have the Rays and the White Sox. The Royals have the Nationals and the Braves, the Braves probably aren't going to have much to play for at that
unless
point.
They sweep the Mets, which is what every Mets fan has been fearing, that this is all just setting them up for heartbreak in Atlanta in September, which is, what the Mets are synonymous with.
It would be very much on brand. But yeah, so it's not. So there is a reason to look at their schedule and be optimistic. But then everybody kind of has that. And so it's a weird situation. The Mariners also have a chance. They're at 6.9%. And they have the Astros and the A's, and I mean, the Astros love to beat up on the Mariners, so that would be if they are able to slay them, and then you never know. But it's there's a lot going on. Buxton, I know he hasn't put up the numbers since he got back, but he looks good to me at the plate. In the field, he's making the plays, but he doesn't look maybe 100%. But he's hitting the ball hard. He's swinging the ball hard. Correa is a little more worrisome because his bat speed is down a little more just in the last day or two. Now, he's been, like, his swing is different also. I think he knows that he doesn't have it, so he is making more contact. He's trying to hit the ball the other way. It's things that a smart veteran player can do, but there's a lot to worry about. You know, they have the 28th best ISO over the past 30 games. Like, that's not where you want to be. In the first half, they were fourth best in baseball. Their ISO was 174. It's 50 points lower over the last month. So it's scary.
Yeah, that's a big swing. And of course, they dropped both legs of a doubleheader to the Red Sox yesterday to kind of put them in this spot. And you know it's bad times for the Twins because I haven't even asked you about Edouard Julien. The Canadian, he doesn't even play now.
He's not playing.
No. Okay, so I did want to pivot to that Red Sox team because you just saw them, because they were playing against the Twins, and also mm-hmm. because you're doing some work for Talk Sox, which must have been incredibly discomforting for you this weekend to be doing Twins and Red Sox stuff as the Red Sox hurt the Twins. For any Jays fans who didn't see it, Rafael Devers has been shut down for the year. And I think because they read your piece at Talk Sox, Kenley Jansen has not been placed on the aisle yet. They're going to shut him down, though, was the talk after yesterday's game. Right. What did you see from this Red Sox team? Where are they? These games don't matter to Toronto or Boston, but what did you see yesterday? What should we be looking for in this one?
Well, I think Boston, the game's, you know, they're not technically eliminated, but they're definitely out of it. However, when you watch the games, they care a lot. Mm-hmm. They're trying hard. And Cora is managing that way. Honestly, managing a little harder than I might like. I've now written a couple things over at Talk Sox about the way that they're using players and expecting Jaron Duran to play. You know, I think he's on pace for 160 games right now, and he's banged up. His performance is down, and he was honestly on what in a normal year might be an MVP pace. You know, I think he's well above 7 wins on the season. So it's they really want it bad, and they're, you know, Jansen is a free agent, so I think they're sort of burning through him a little bit. Devers really could have used a break. You know, someone, David Adler from MLB, posted his bat speed numbers over a monthly basis this year, and they're down every single month and big drop off. And so that's, you know, everyone has known for a long time now that his shoulders, both of them, were bothering him. And it's just they gave him I think 5 games off earlier in the season, but they kind of felt enough pressure not to do that again. And it's hard, you know, they're missing Story. The infield's really been hurting. Casas, they were missing for much of the season. So it's a weird time, but they're still playing hard. They're in it to win. So I would expect that going forward.
Yeah, and there's still I mean, like with any team, there's stuff to play for, right? The Jays have a bunch of guys auditioning for 2025 roles. Jaron Duran has, you know, as much as this pains me to say, like, he's Dalton Varsho's primary competition for the American League center field goal glove. Like, he has him because Varsho played 40% of his season in left field. The way the gold glove voting works and the way the statistical component works, Jaron Duran has Varsho beat by 2 defensive runs saved, for example, in center field.
Really?
He in center field, Varsho also leads American League left fielders, but that doesn't count the way that Saber uses the stats. Saber and Rollins use the stats there. So there's that component as well. They also have 2 of the more fascinating free agents in Tyler O'Neill and Nick Pivetta, where, like, O'Neill obviously hasn't stayed healthy at any point in his career, but, like, this year was a concussion and a leg infection. Like, it's not like he had a hamstring and a groin issue that won't go away. He had random stuff this year. Are those 2 guys pretty fascinating for you as well in terms of not just free agency, but the qualifying offer decision on the Red Sox side?
Well, O'Neill especially, I think because he's come back and he's over 30 home runs and in a normal season, you know, he's getting a little older now, but he's always been a great defensive outfielder. I think they're going to have to give him the qualifying offer because now I think, you know, before it was a real question because they weren't sure if he would accept it. But I think his play over the last week or two has really cemented he's going to do a better job on free agency, which means you give him the QO and expect him to leave. And if for some reason he doesn't, then they've got way too many outfielders, which they would have anyway. But that's a great problem to have. They're going to have to trade from some depth here. They've got Roman Anthony breaking down the door, you know, to start with the big league club next season. So he's an interesting guy. I think he is going to end up going somewhere and get paid, but they'll be glad to have be able to give him the qualifying offer because that helps them.
Last one on the Sox for you. It's not today's game. We're seeing Tanner Houck today, but we know Tanner Houck pretty well. Last time we saw Brian Baio, it was a really good start, and it seemed like there were some signs, and the last couple starts, it really seems like he started to figure something back out again. What have you seen from Baio down the stretch here? Obviously, you know, like with Bowden Francis and the Blue Jays, a huge swing piece to potentially projecting them forward to 2025 if Brian Baio is legitimate again.
Right, and I mean, that's a real, I don't think anybody is certain, to tell the truth. You know, when you watch him, he has these flashes of brilliance and he has stuff, but the command is a real issue. You know, I think he's well over 3 walks over 9 innings. And even when he was pitching well, he was still walking people. So it's a matter of how much will his command improve over time. And I don't think anybody can say that for certain. You know, he's a young, exciting piece. I think Sox fans, to a person, are looking at him and thinking he could be a great number 2 starter, but we need to go out and get an ace. And the problem is there isn't really an ace out there right now. So I think they're very excited about him, but it's still, they're going to have to wait and see.
Yeah, it's a tough one. And yeah, the only ace that's out there really is Corbin Burnes, and that's going to cost you probably $200 million. And if you have other areas you need to address, you know, that's, your money doesn't go that far if you drop $200 million on one guy. Corbin Burnes, pretty good guy to drop it on, but I digress.
Well, true, but I think, I love Corbin Burnes and he has pitched well, but the underlying numbers, like his cutter, which has been his bread and butter for his entire career, it hasn't been performing that well of late. And if you're getting Corbin Burnes, you want to feel very good about that cutter.
At the price, yeah, you're absolutely going to. Davey, finally, before I let you go, Stephen Kwan had a second fast swing recently. Did you notice that?
Wait, I know
that,
did?
Yeah, there's, I think, September 7th or something like that, right? Not long after you wrote your piece. So he's now at 2 fast swings on the season. I'm sorry to break that to you.
That is, I'm sorry for the people on the radio. You couldn't see my face when Mike said that. I cannot wait to check that out. I love the way that he plays, and the fact that he's been hitting for all this power without swinging hard is just, what a fun thing to watch.
Yeah, it's a blast. Davey, always a blast to chat with you, man. Keep up all the great work at Fangraphs and Twins Daily and Talk Sox, and it's hard to keep up, man.
And there's a couple others in there.
I don't really mean this, but best of luck to your Twins. I hope this week goes well for you.
I am rooting for the Twins. I can't help it. You know, You're not supposed to when you're covering the whole league, but
you're allowed.
But it's been a special year in this case. So yeah, I'm really hoping they turn things around.
All right. Best of luck with that. Best of luck with the heartburn it'll bring. Davey Andrews of Fangraphs and Twins Daily. Thanks, man.
All right. Thank you, Blake.
Davey Andrews, Fangraphs, Twins Daily. Just a reminder that Sportsnet 590 The Fan is proud to support the Canadian Cancer Society CIBC Run for the Cure on Sunday, October 6th at Sir Winston Churchill Park, which is at 301 St. Clair Avenue West in Toronto, where registration gets underway at 8:30 a.m. This is Canada's largest single-day volunteer-led event in support of all people impacted by breast cancer. Funds raised will support world-leading breast cancer research and the compassionate support system for all who need it. For full details, visit sportsnet.ca/590 or cancer.ca. Yeah, good cause. I will not be running that far, but good for the people who are, and I'll certainly donate to those who are. I'm a couple pounds from my marathoning days, which was actually a thing I did at one point. So good for those people. Can't be me right now. Jays, Chris Bassett against Tanner Houck tonight. Chris Bassett looks to right the ship a little bit. He's been the one Blue Jays starter who's had a bit of a tough second half here. ERA up over 5 in the second half. Tough outing last time, although he only got hung with 1 earned run for that one because there were a couple errors behind him. He made one himself. Ernie Clement made one. So he comes in at a 4.16 ERA. He'd probably like to get that down below 4 at this point. It might take 2 starts to do it. We don't know if this is going to be his last start or if the final game of the season will be some sort of bullpen day or call-up day or something like that. But either way, always good to see the Hound on the mound. Tanner Houck on the other side, who you've seen a lot of over the years, probably don't need a refresher on Tanner Houck. And then elsewhere in baseball, Arizona hosts San Francisco and Philadelphia hosts the Cubs. Those are wild card relevant games and playoff race relevant games. Seattle is at Houston in a game that could more or less lock up the American League West and have some wild card implications there as well. We will be back tomorrow at 11 a.m. To break tonight's game down, maybe talk a little Bills Jaguars. We'll see how tonight goes. And tomorrow's the season finale, so look forward to that. Thank you to Arden Zwelling and Davey Andrews for joining us. Thank you to Ahmed Mon, Andrew Adams, and Jennifer Rolnick behind the glass. Have a wonderful Monday.